Then, every person in our group did some kind of boxes, and our last version was to put them all in a cabinet of drawers, so that we have 20 drawers, and maybe done by 10 different people.
I see.
And there would be one which has all like a dozen music movements, which you can turn them all together, like 12 different songs that can play simultaneously. Or that's a Joe Jones piece. He's doing a lot of work with automatic or self-playing musical instruments,
okay,
or music boxes. He would take a music movement from a music box and destroy some of the prongs, you know, like break off half of them. So you just have like bits and fragments of the song. Just like a couple tones keep repeating. And then, there's some objects. There is also a recent object of Larry Miller, is a fan, for a ceiling fan, which goes as slow as a clock, very slow. Right. And then another, on a wall, there is a clock that has the fan motor, so it goes as fast as the fan. So you have two useless objects.
Fan
that doesn't
working.
Cool, and and a clock that doesn't give time.
Okay. What museums are these exhibited in, these boxes, that type of thing?
Well, up to like last year, no museum, and there were just two collectors. And there are two archives that originally started as archives of Dada collections, and then expanded into include Flux objects. One is in Germany, Hans Sohm archives, and about equal size archive is in Tieringham in Massachusetts of Gene Brown. And that those archives have almost complete all our objects that we made, which must be like several hundred. Yeah, objects, documents, I mean, even furniture. There's like whole a quartet or orchestra of Joe Jones, all kinds of musical chairs that you would, like there is a chair where, they're sort of like box-like chairs, and those were made by Takako Saito, who also has done like sound chairs or musical chairs pieces. But the chairs are very funny also, because they when they serve, like on one you may sit down, and there would be a rolling ball inside. When you sit down, the ball rolls from one corner to another. You get up, it rolls again.
Mm-hmm.
Or another chair may produce a puddle of water underneath. Or another chair would squirt at your neighbor water. So you set them up for dinner, like, well, around the table.
Around the table.
Each chair is an event.
Well, George, let's get back a little bit. How did Fluxus get its start?
Well,
Alexandrian school, is that?
Yeah, it's at Alexandrian school. Actually, the sort of more obvious start is in when the name was first used in 1960, or I think it's 1961, fall, late 1961. And that was a sort of direct influence. It was influenced directly by the school of John Cage that he had in the new school, where people like George Brecht, Dick Higgins, Jackson McClow were taking in 1958 to 59, I think. They were taking a class. And all those people later were associated with Fluxus. Then there were sort of indirect influences of
you've got quite a chart here.
Yeah, like I would say like anti-art statements of Vladimir Mayakovsky, who influenced Henry Flint directly. And Henry Flint was sort of a peripheral Flux person. Sometimes he was, sometimes he wasn't. But he was, I would say, a sympathetic observer.
Sympathetic observer.
Then I would say strong influence of like vaudeville and just plain gags of like Buster Keaton or Spike Jonze. Even if some of us may not have known of Spike Jonze, but he would definitely be like a precursor. And Futurist theater, I think, also played important part in influencing us. Then Marcel Duchamp is probably the greatest influence, and he influenced John Cage in turn, who influenced us.
Right.
And then the Dadas, but especially the Paris Dadas, they were doing more events then. Okay. In Zurich, they had some events in Cabaret Voltaire, but in Paris, they were doing almost like street events or tours and, you know, more varied kind of events rather than just a cabaret situation.
When are the street events starting to happen now? The street events are starting to happen now with the Dadas then?
And well, they had the events where there's one very famous one where the audience was, you know, the way audience usually throw tomatoes at performance.
Right.
Performers, when they don't like it, well, here the performers came out with baskets of tomatoes and started to throw them at the audience.
Yeah, right, I think I recall that one. Yeah.
Well, the futurists have done even before that. They've done things like they would have a whole play, they lift the curtain only like a couple inches, and the whole play would go on behind. You just see the feet, they call it foot theater. But that's sort of similar to a piece of Ben Boitier, who has a lot of sort of theater shock pieces, as he calls. And there would be, for instance, a play going on, and all announced, so the people will come for that play, but the door is locked. Meanwhile, the play starts and goes on. And they just, you know, they hear all the noises, but they cannot get in.
Okay, so they're beating on the outside.
Or there is another audience piece like that, similar, where at the end of the concert we would tell that, well, the last piece has to be performed in a secret place, and we have to take one row at a time to that place. So the usher will take the first row there of people, they would follow him, and he would just take them down the back exit into the street out of the theater. Meanwhile, the rest, you know, they all sort of thinking in anticipation, what's that next piece? And then just one, and they'll never know except when they actually go through it.
Right. So that goes on for an hour.
Yeah.
Oh.